Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello. Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Guy Geese with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to the November episode of Revenue Marketer Radio. I am so excited. We have an outstanding speaker with us today. That's Chris Newton, who's VP of Marketing at Exactly. And today's topic is one that any executive who is thinking into 2013 should be considering, and that is, how do you build a high-performing revenue marketing team? So before we get into our chat with Chris, let me just tell you a little bit about the show. We've been running this show going on 3 years now, and it's all designed really to talk to real revenue marketers and learn tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing, and more importantly, for an executive, how you're transforming marketing from a cost center to a revenue center. And once more, before we get into the show, I would like to take a moment to define the term revenue marketing. I will tell you, though, since we started the show, the term revenue marketer and revenue marketing seems to be all over the place. I'm finding people with titles in revenue marketing, and it's very, very nice to see. But our definition for revenue marketer is that specific type of marketer, just like you might have a product marketer, who has some revenue or revenue-related accountability through the kinds of campaigns, communications, and digital interactions they set up. Revenue marketers are responsible for the top of the sales funnel and interacting with and nurturing leads until they're sales ready. And all revenue marketers use some type of marketing automation platform integrated with CRM to power their revenue marketing practice and to get those real revenue results. So with that, let's get into our interview. And again, Chris Newton is the VP of Marketing for Exactly. And Chris is also a serial entrepreneur. So when I was thinking about the topic of building a revenue marketing team, I couldn't think of anybody better than Chris. So Chris, welcome to the show.
So glad to be here today, Debbie.
So tell us, Chris, a little bit about your background and kind of what you do for Exactly.
Sure. I've been at Exactly for about a year and a half now, responsible for the marketing organization here, and we're, of course, on the hook from the CEO and leadership team to pass, you know, a constant flow of leads on to the sales organization for, you know, triage and follow-up and turning those into opportunities and business for the organization. I've been at a number of other companies. As you mentioned, the marketing automation software is a big part of this. This is the third company I've been at where I've been using Marketo. But, you know, prior to that life as a user, I spent 7 years at Siebel, where I was responsible for their marketing automation product line, and we had a number of different elements there, loyalty programs management. We had airline customers. We had a marketing resource management solution, as well as some of the basic marketing automation software, as was available back, you know, 10 years ago. It's amazing how much things have progressed since that time in terms of the type of data that's available to us and the type of tracking and what you can do with emails and landing pages and measurement today that was just simply not available when I was, you know, initially starting out putting together some of those initial marketing automation capabilities for the Siebel platform.
So, Chris, you're absolutely right. I mean, what the technology allows us to do today, you know, without the technology, it's really kind of even have a definition of a revenue marketer because there's really no way to close that loop on the impact that marketing is making on revenue and specifically, you know, how we create those leads. So completely agree. Huge changes, and especially given your background, 7 years at Siebel, and again, your third company with using marketing automation. Again, that to me is what makes you a serial revenue marketer. Not a lot of people out there can say that. But I want to talk about Exactly, and I know that you said you've been there for about a year and a half now. So when Exactly hired you, were they looking for a VP of marketing that had revenue marketing experience? Was that a big part of what they were looking for?
Well, the conversation that we had at the time I started was that, you know, that they had a pretty small marketing team. They didn't actually have a head of marketing at that time. They had sort of chosen to, you know, pull back and be a little bit cautious through the, you know, the downturn. But business was really kind of ticking up. The sales team was doing an amazing job, you know, getting a lot of business done. But the marketing team that was in place had been, you know, scaled back to the point that they could really only focus on a few things. They were very good at, you know, public relations and winning awards and getting some media coverage. They ran some fantastic events, had a super presence at, you know, Dreamforce events and many other trade shows around. They were, you know, organizing their first user conference and things like that. But the pieces that were really missing at that time, I felt, were that steady flow of leads coming from the organization, you know, regardless of whether Dreamforce was last week, are we sending leads to sales? So putting together programs and thinking about things in that way also highlighted the fact that there was a real lack of content generation. The website that was in place was beautiful, modern website, lots of great information about our company, Exactly's customers, Exactly's solutions, Exactly's awards, Exactly's partners. But for the visitor to the site that wasn't yet looking to learn about Exactly in particular, we didn't have a lot of, you know, best practice thought leadership, tips and tricks type information where they could learn about our space, sales compensation, incentives, rewards, motivation, how to take those capabilities and align your team to do what you need them to do. We believe Exactly really sits at that intersection between, you know, what a company's objectives are and the power of incentives and motivation to align a workforce to drive behaviors that are going to help the company achieve those objectives. And talking about how that works at a high level is a natural place to start with folks before you dive into the solutions and the products and, you know, get around how everything works. So building that steady flow of leads to the sales team was going to require some new programs and processes that were going to be fueled by a new set of content. And so I really saw those two main areas as the big challenge. And that's what I pitched to the management team who ultimately hired me and brought me on board.
So that is so interesting. And again, we have a lot of listeners who are just beginning this revenue marketing journey. So how interesting it was that you had to actually come in and help educate the senior management team at Exactly into what marketing could actually be and the value that it could provide. And obviously you're very successful in that because they hired you.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I think that they shared the vision. There was a lot more that we could do. We see such a great market potential for this. There's so many companies that have salespeople, right? This is across verticals. This is across company size. If you look at the amount of money that's spent in the U.S. each year on sales compensation, it's $800 billion, which is larger than the largest social programs that the federal government is funding. It's larger than the amount, you know, spent on advertising, you know, many times over. And it's a tremendous amount of leverage and power to drive those organizations to do the things you need to do. So we need to get and at the same time, that amount of spending is largely managed in spreadsheets today. So we need to educate the world that there's a better way to do this. There's just today, you would never think of running your marketing campaign through Excel. You'd never think of running your CRM system through Excel. So why are people content to run their sales compensation incentives programs that way? It's just far too prone to error. It introduces, you know, latency in the payments. And then there's also problems with, you know, just the whole motivational element itself, the person that you're trying to induce to perform and behave a certain way can't have the visibility into that spreadsheet that would drive those behaviors. So that's the message that we want to get out there and talk about. So we began building nurturing programs and nurturing campaigns.
Chris, wait, hold on. Just before you get there, I just want to make sure that people can follow along with the story. So what you're saying is that there was a clear vision. There was an incredible opportunity for Exactly in the market. And so you come into the company, you've got a small sales team. So kind of pick it up from there. How did you come in? Because this is your third rodeo, right, with marketing automation, and you know the impact it can have. So when you came into Exactly as the new VP of marketing and you knew what had to have happened, how did you first come in and assess and work with your existing team?
So the first thing to do was to figure out what sort of programs they had in place. While we had many of the solutions, the actual software solutions there, the way they were being used wasn't up to kind of best practices and what we ultimately wanted to do. And it was pretty clear that we, you know, part of the reason was we just didn't have the personnel or the focus on the team to be able to do that. So at that time, there were they're basically a director of marketing and then a creative manager who was working on the website. And we had a third person who was helping with just about everything that was going on, events management and running the marketing automation solution and everything else. So really the first thing I did was to carve out that individual and sort of protect her time so that she became the power user for the marketing automation solution and the driver behind the analytics that we were going to generate. And while she was amazing at helping us run successful events and so many other things, we just couldn't afford to have her spending her time in that way. So that was really the first thing that I did. And then in order to backfill some of those other things, we went out and found some contractor help initially to help us run trade shows and events because this obviously had to happen. But I saw the skills in this person who, you know, I wanted to run the marketing automation system that are not always available, sort of, you know, logic and analytics, you know, come naturally to this person and the great attention to detail that's required to set up these things and make the different programs work together. One of the challenges is it's so easy today with the modern software to set up a marketing campaign, even a multi-stage campaign or a triggered campaign or a full-flow nurturing campaign with multiple tracks and automated follow-up, that the challenge is not that individual campaign. The challenge is staying on top of the details and understanding the interactions between the campaign. So that's why you need to find, you know, on your team someone who sort of has that analytical tendency as well with, you know, as well as that attention to detail and ability to kind of dive in and roll up their sleeves and figure this out. And that's also why they need sort of sufficient amount of time to think about this. This is not something, unfortunately, that you can do with just a little bit of attention. You are going to require, you know, some focus in this area to get these things right.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And, you know, it's so interesting that this was one of the very first areas that you focused on to make sure that you had in-house from day one. And it's because you've been down that road before. Quite often, Chris, when I walk into a client, this is almost like the last person that they hire. And I agree with you. I think that's a mistake because at the end of the day, the whole purpose of revenue marketing is to produce measurable impact on revenue. And if you can't have someone in that analytical role taking a look at those details, and to your point, thinking about how all these things work together and giving them time to think about it, I just completely agree. A critical role very, very early out of the box. So you had somebody on board who could take over that responsibility, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to walk into a situation where we did have somebody here who would, you know, sort of had the raw materials of what we needed for that. I was able to, you know, get her a little bit extra training, connect her with some other folks in the, you know, marketing automation community to talk to, learn new things. And she's sort of now at the stage where when we have, we often will host Silicon Valley user group type meetings for the marketing automation solution, and she could certainly teach these classes, and you know sometimes doesn't have the patience to sit through because there's some, you know, basic topics, and we're really finding a need to kind of break out and have, you know, groups for beginners, because absolutely you got to learn, start somewhere and get moving up the power curve, but then break out into the folks that are trying to do some more advanced level and sophisticated things, which can get pretty complex on the analytics side and really you know, to break apart and understand and tweak and triumph, you've got to keep pushing things. And so, you know, she's been a great find for us internally. And it's been really, I'm patting myself on the back for selecting her to run that stuff. But those are the attributes you're looking for, is someone that has that analytical mindset and the attention to detail, and the willingness to kind of dive in and stay on top of it.
That's what I was going to ask you next. If you didn't have that role in place today and you were going to go put together a job spec, you know, the attributes that you would be looking for, you mentioned a couple: analytical, attention to detail. What else would you add to that job spec?
This is where, you know, you need a little bit of a business mind. You need someone who can think about, you know, why these things matter, and, you know, and make these trade-offs. And because there's, whether you're in the weeds looking at your scores, your scoring rules, and you're going to determine based upon behavior on the website or somebody's, you know, fit in terms of their profile, you know, just working through the nuance and detail of that, and then trying to decide which of those scoring rules are working and which maybe are not, or deconflicting multiple campaigns that might be going out. You've got this great nurturing track, but boy, I also want to promote this webinar that's coming up. How do I do that without stomping on each other's messaging and, you know, figuring out how you're going to vary, you know, the senders that these are coming from? Maybe the nurturing comes from the sales team, as we do, and the webinar or more event-based stuff comes from the marketing team, so they're receiving things from different people. Or if you're adding in sort of automated delays into the nurturing track, if other emails have gone out in certain periods of time, let's just hold off on that nurturing email for another week or some period of time so we don't overload folks. Working through those nuances of all the little details of your marketing programs is something this person's going to have to do. So those are the type of skills I look for. And I don't know if this is a coincidence, but I happen to hire the two best I've had came straight out of UC Berkeley, one of our local universities, you know, just up the road. We're here in Silicon Valley. So, you know, finding a particularly, you know, strong academic institution nearby is where you might, you know, find folks like this is not a bad thing as well.
Oh, so you hired kids right out of college, or were they MBAs?
No, they were. They weren't directly out, but they were sort of recent graduates from undergrad program there. And but they're, you know, sharp and, you know, had the right skills and eager to learn. And, you know, I was able to talk to both of them about, you know, the value of getting these skills early in their career. And as they understand this better than their peers in other areas of marketing, I truly believe this is kind of a career track within marketing that's going to be, you know, very useful and help them proceed as they move along.
I could not agree more. I mean, my gosh, this whole revenue marketing thing, the thing that you do day in and day out, and exactly, they don't teach in undergraduate school and they don't teach in MBA programs. And it's just criminal almost. So just one other quick question about these recent graduates, because, you know, people are always interested, where do you find great talent? Did they have a particular undergraduate degree, or did it seem to matter?
I don't recall the specific degree, and it was more around the skills and the talents I saw in the individual. And the degree might have actually, you know, led me to help me believe that was the person to do this and, you know, try this out, but that all sort of worked out.
Okay, that's awesome. So you had somebody, they became a Marketo power user. You had this person who was great in analytics, and so we understand, you know, the role of analytics and kind of the skill sets. What other kind of talent do you have on your team?
Well, clearly the next big gaping hole we had to fill was the content development. I mean, you can put together, you know, an amazing nurturing campaign, but if you don't have anything good to send or anything good that's going to content that's going to engage people and entice them to respond, that's the biggest challenge you have. So we looked to find a marketing content manager. I hesitate to call her just a writer because it's so much more than that. There's, you know, it's social media content. Sometimes it's writing just an email for the nurturing. Sometimes it's developing, you know, the payload for that email, the guide or whatever it is that we want to send out. everybody wants to call them white papers. I sort of cringe at that term. I don't even want to really read a white paper anymore, but I would like to learn about, you know, best practices or success tips or, success kit or something along those lines. So we're trying to package up things in that way and make that information consumable for folks so that they will engage and we can kind of move them along that flow. So that was really the next critical role. And for that, we did hire from the outside. I ended up bringing in somebody who had previous experience in journalism. She had never worked at a tech company before and was just a very someone who I would be terrified if my job was to write the blog every day. I'm not a prolific writer, but some people are like that. I just don't have that gene in my makeup, and she clearly did. You know, that was exciting to her to have publication deadlines and build things out and get stuff done. And there's always a new way to tell the story, to engage a new audience, or come at it with a new customer angle or another role that perhaps we're dealing and working with. And, so she was a great fit for the team and came in, was able to help us begin to generate the materials. And when you're talking about launching a nurturing program, it's really fairly daunting in terms of the amount of materials you're going to require. Ours is a relatively simple program, I think, and there's a lot more that we want to do to it. That's the other point. This is never, I wouldn't consider ourselves done by any means. We have this stuff up and running, but I'm not ever happy with the success that we have. I think we can have better material and more targeted material, and we're going to look at enhancing what we have and the content, finding new and better ways to do things. But to get it up and running initially, we went after a six-track nurturing program that was split along kind of two main axes. We mostly talk with either salespeople and sales management, sales ops, around motivating the sales team, or we talk with finance people, the people that are on the hook for calculating and paying these incentives out. And depending upon which of those roles we're talking to, you know, the messages are going to vary considerably. So that's why it was so important for us to break that out. If we're talking to sales team, we're talking about motivation and incentives and achievement and rewards. And if we're talking to the finance team, we're talking about elimination of errors, building credibility with sales, timeliness of payments, saving time and resources on your team. We talk about, you know, putting the analyst back in the business analyst role because they now have time to do that instead of just wrestle with these, you know, spreadsheets and that are, you know, error prone and making sure that they don't. The worst thing they want is to go to some sales guy, 3 weeks or a month later and tell them, hey, we paid you too much. We need some of that money back. Or to have the conversation with the CEO about the ramifications of doing that if it's on a broader scale than, you know, one or two folks. So they spend a ton of time, you know, in these sheets making sure everything's right. And there's candidly a better way to do it. And that's what we're all about, helping those people see that.
So, Chris, when you think about the role of you've got a person that's dedicated to being a power user in analytics. You've got a person that's dedicated to content. Who's the person who envisions the kinds of campaigns that you need to create?
Well, so this is an interesting point. In the first year and a half that I've been here, we've really built up this team that I think of sort of a marketing services organization that has the capacity to develop the content, build the campaigns, execute the campaigns, run the trade shows, work with the PR team, and so forth. But we didn't have that head of the organization that was thinking about, okay, so for my market, what is the target? So we go after customers across the spectrum. So we've got many companies that are have 1,000 or more sales reps, you know, big organizations, and we've got many that have less than 100. So the needs and the constraints and how you reach people and who actually is the buying center is totally different. So we've hired what I'm calling product marketing managers, but they're it's very heavy on the marketing. It's the go-to-market strategy. It's thinking all day long. Let's say I'm the guy responsible for that SMB side of things. Who is the buying center? Why are they buying our product? What messages are going to resonate with them? How do I find more people like them? What are the best campaigns and tactics that I can use to engage more folks like that? it at that scale of an organization, I don't have someone titled a compensation administrator. On the enterprise side, however, those compensation administrators are some of the most important people for us to reach. So because that go-to-market side of it is fundamentally different, we need that individual to help us think very clearly about the tactics that we're going to use in that space. Industry analysts and some of the larger trade shows are great on the enterprise side. Not so helpful for the SMBs. Those people don't have the budgets to pay for the analyst reports from Gartner and others, and they don't have, you know, the time or budget or, you know, travel capacity to attend some of the larger trade shows. So you got to figure out, okay, how are we going to manage and change our go-to-market tactics to fit that marketplace? And that's what this person is really all about. They're thinking about that specific target market 100% of the time, and then working with my marketing services side of the team to actually execute the tactics and campaigns in that market.
So interesting. So let me make sure I've got this right. So you've got product marketing managers, and do they report to you or do they report to somewhere else in the organization?
It's sort of a dotted line thing. We've created, for the SMB side of things, exactly 5 years, in 2005 was founded, and we went after mid-market and then have moved up into the enterprise space with our flagship product called Exactly Incent. A couple years ago, we launched an entirely new product built on the Salesforce's Force.com platform that was meant to do many of the same things, but be geared for that SMB audience. It has to be much easier and quicker and cheaper to install and manage and run on an ongoing basis, and you know, have all the pre-built integration with Salesforce, and now we offer with QuickBooks and other things that are appropriate for that marketplace. It doesn't need to have some of the more complex attributes of a larger product, the whole separate environment that you might use to plan and so forth. So that group is a startup within a startup. That individual reports over there, but I meet with him weekly, and he meets with my team and attends all of our meetings and everything else.
Okay. So this is so interesting to me because a lot of times in organizations, Chris, when we take a look at the role of product marketing managers, it seems to be very divorced from revenue marketing, but it sounds like at Exactly you've kind of made them program managers so that they understand the market, they've got a vision for it, and all the typical things that product marketing should do, but you guys have a close-knit relationship between the two parts of the company, so it comes out to be one great result.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons it's a little hard to describe this role, because as soon as I say product marketer, people think they know what that is. And sure, this person is responsible for thinking about data sheets and some of those other things, but that's not really what I see them as doing. I see them as, you know, being my partner as we evaluate how are, you know, PPC campaigns performing in their market, and does that make sense for their market, and should we do more of that or should we do less of that, and how do the events and trade shows, all this, along that, it's a business planning and business strategy, and, you know, directing the resources we have in the right place is the primary objective of that individual.
That is so interesting. So when you guys hired these product marketing managers and brought them on board, did they kind of get that? I mean, that's kind of what you hired them for? Or were they more classical on the product marketing side? Or
no, I think they absolutely get that. And, you know, we're right now going through a planning cycle for next year's budget, and it's a, you know, we have a couple meetings this afternoon, and it's me and, you know, one of these individuals sitting down, and we're going through all the assumptions. We sort of did a top-down budget. We're starting with, okay, well, if these are the, let's say these are the revenue targets we want to hit, how are we going to get there? How much sales qualified pipeline do we need to get there? Assuming that it's sort of there's kind of a complicated model involved, but assuming you've got some backlog of that and you've got to create some new each period and you're going to close different rates of the backlog and the new, how much of this pipeline do we need? How many marketing qualified leads do we need to fill into the pipeline? And we actually look at not just the marketing qualified leads, but we have two other categories. We call them sales qualified leads, which are sort of the outbound prospecting things that have just a different process. They're not coming through the marketing campaigns. And then we also have the partner-sourced leads, and both of those are really critical to our overall business success. And thinking about the mix of these three sources and how they're coming in and what part of that marketing needs to support, and therefore backing into which programs we're going to have to run. And if we have a general sense of what our cost per lead is or cost per MQL for those types of programs, now I get a sense of what my budget needs to look like for next year for if we're going to hit the revenue targets that the company ultimately wants to hit. So it sort of changes the scope of the conversation with the CFO as we're in that planning process. And this person in this role is directly involved in that planning process.
I love this model. Oh, my gosh, this is so great. I also really like, Chris, that you've got MQL, that's for marketing, SQLs, sales generated, and PQLs, you know, from partners. That is such a great way to take a look at how everything is coming together. And, of course, the new model from Serious Decisions shows some great things there. But I really do really, really like the way you guys have defined product marketing within your organization. It just makes so much sense. Again, a little bit more challenging in large companies where they have more of a traditional product marketing and product marketing management focus. But this is a model that I can see why and how that's working so well for you guys. So we've talked about power users. We've talked about analytics. We've talked about content. We've talked about kind of like, you know, the person who kind of envisions and says this is what I need in order for us to be successful around this product. What other roles do you have on your team?
There's a couple other roles that are very, you know, pretty well understood and probably don't require as much description, but they're very important. I mentioned briefly we have someone who focuses on events management. That's our participation in trade shows. It's our development of our own seminars and roadshows. It's management of our webinars, and it's management of our large user conference. So that's a critical role for us because all of those things are elements of what moves things along. Even our user conference, which is targeted largely at existing customers, has tremendous impact as we're able to invite, you know, prospects and as well find, you know, a lot of add-on and upsell business with the existing customer base. So that's a critical role for us. We also have a couple folks, because this is such a big area, that are responsible for the website design, graphic design in general, even, you know, handouts for bag inserts for trade shows or advertising that is used in banner ads or, you know, optimizing our landing page, you know, graphical appearance for the, you know, PPC and other campaigns that we might run. There's just a ton of that graphic design and, you know, website type work. So that's another group. And then the third area that I hadn't yet talked about was there's someone on the team who is she's responsible for getting meetings. And this is distinct from the function in our company where we have the ADR or sales development rep, account development reps that are really the lead triage group. So as marketing has an MQL, that's the group that it goes to for them to decide, is this thing, you know, worth handing off and engaging a sales rep? We like to have a relatively low bar to get people to that group from marketing, but then they're the ones that need to dig in and figure out is it worth handing off to sales and involving that, you know, person, because their time is really critical, of course. And so that's a critical function in the organization that in our case doesn't report to marketing. We've talked about doing that. We've kind of gone back and forth. But just geographically, most of that ADR, SDR team and the manager for that team is in our remote sales office in Denver, and it's worked out quite well to have it managed that way. So it hasn't put them there. But the role that is on my team is this person who's responsible for getting meetings. And where she fits in, she doesn't get any of the inbound MQLs. But if I'm running a seminar or another event and I need to have attendees, she will help us work the phones and the prospects and just augment what that ADR team is doing in terms of inviting people and getting them there. The other thing that she does is she picks up the difficult accounts. So if the ADRs each work with their individual sales reps, and the sales reps on our enterprise side all have territories that they own, and within those territories, they've each got 12 or 15 accounts that they would love to get into, but they just haven't been able to over the years, and the nurturing campaigns, as great as they are, they're not doing it, and the ADRs have tried, and they're not getting it done. So what is this target list, 12, 15 per rep, and what can we do to get in there? So this person on my team is you know, maybe the best I've ever seen at this, but she works, we don't measure on how many phone calls she gets. It's all about how many meetings she gets. So she works the web and LinkedIn and all the other resources available to her. She somehow works her way around the gatekeepers in these organizations and gets meetings at specific companies with specific titles, you know, for that sales team. And we find that an effective way, you know, for the very targeted high-end accounts to just augment what we're doing with the more automated campaigns. And so it's a specific tactical investment decision to have a person like that for that sort of activity, which is clearly higher cost than the more automated things that we do. But it is an important part of our overall strategy.
I think that's awesome. I think that so many marketing teams are remiss either in how they use an SDR or an ADR or a telequal team, and they certainly are remiss in having a role like just getting meetings. I think that is absolutely fabulous. And I think it's great that you have that on the team. I want to go back to the ADR, and you had mentioned, Chris, that you guys kind of set a low bar from an NQL status to pass that lead over to the, I think it's being passed to the ADR or the SDR, and that role it lives within sales. So tell me about how your team interacts with that role.
So this has been one of the areas that, you know, we're continuing to evolve. So as marketing has been getting more mature in what we're doing and the quality of the leads we are passing, we believe, is getting better, you know, getting sales to trust us and to use those and to follow up on the ones we send, you know, is clearly important. So we have, you know, recently in the last few months, have a new manager for this group. And that's really been a big help because that person is now the manager of that ADR team is, you know, on the phone. And I mentioned she's in the Denver office instead of San Jose. But she's on the phone and I am many times a day with the power user of our Marketo, you know, marketing automation solution, because we're making sure that, you know, leads that we're importing are coming with the right quality, and as we, you know, do a data append from some other source, is that working for her team? Are the scoring rules that we have working for them? Do they want to modify or tweak? And recently we made some changes to titles that, you know, to help them get better folks, and it's just an ongoing conversation for those two people. And, you know, I can't even list the number of things that they have to talk about. And so the tight linkage between that organization, even though it doesn't exist within marketing, it's outside of marketing, that tight coordination is really the key for success there. The reason we have a relatively low bar is, you know, if our volume of leads was so high that we only could cherry pick and talk to the very best ones, we would do that. But, you know, this is an inexact science. I can't just tell from my automated systems which really are the best. And having human contact to validate that and see what's real there is really valuable, and that the cost of missing somebody because we didn't follow up, or, you know, we just sort of let them come to our website, download some stuff, and maybe attend a webinar and then kind of veer off and do whatever they're doing. If we don't reach out to that person and sort of see what's going on and try and get, you know, connect and engage, you know, that's shame on us. So that's why I want to have a relatively low bar for those folks. Let's have them follow up on people that are attending the webinars and see what's there and see if there's something we can do to help. And the worst case you learn is, well, they sort of have a need. There's no budget, no urgency, but this is maybe something for us down the road. Perfect. Don't send them to sales, but send them right back to our nurturing programs in the right track of the nurturing program, and we're going to get that business at some point in the future. But it was worthwhile to make that call, because let's say they did have an ongoing process, we would not have known about it without doing that.
That's right. I love that model, and I love that even though that function lives in sales, you guys are so tightly integrated with them. That's rare. So kudos to you and your team, Chris. Well, So I'd like to kind of get toward the end of the interview, and you have been so gracious, Chris, because you're just like a textbook. Anybody who is looking to build a revenue marketing team, this should be like the textbook for them because you have given us so much great information. So I'd like for you to, if you could, for our audience, and again, think about the person that's just beginning to build this team. Now, what are the top two or three lessons learned or pieces of advice that you give to a VP of marketing who, you know, is coming into a company and has to build out this team?
Yeah, I think it's just sort of map out what, you know, where you're trying to go, and don't get too daunted by that, and, you know, start somewhere, and as you identify the other gaps, work to fill those in. With us, it was, you know, the immediate glaring thing that I saw was, we have these solutions in-house, we're not using them, and asking the question why we weren't using them, it's because nobody's spending enough time with them to use them effectively. I've got to carve out time for somebody to do this. Who can do it? Here's the individual. I didn't have to hire outside. Put them on that. Okay, now we're starting to create the structure of some of these basic initial nurturing campaigns and scoring rules and landing pages and so forth. What do I need next? I need stuff to fill it, and it just moved us into the content role. That was the path that I followed. I didn't have to worry about the creative design because we already had that. You know, other teams are going to find that they have different skills in-house or available through contractor. I should mention that, you know, while I have hired a number of full-time employees, we are constantly balancing between, do we want to bring someone on in a full-time role, or there is an amazing world of, you know, talent that's available on a contract basis, and we work with many different experts in almost all of the areas that I talked about. Running our, you know, the Marketo programs that we run wouldn't have been possible without some contractors that we've worked with on that side, and running the content that we develop, I have the in-house person, but she also has contract writers that she relies upon for some of the blog posts and other things that we do. We put out an entire magazine with Selling Power that required a lot of extra help, and when we do a project like that that needs a surge of activity, you can't always bring someone in-house, so having that contract labor that you can go to. On the graphic design side, I was fortunate to have some real talented folks here already, but we are now having, you know, an overcapacity issue there. Undercapacity. We need more stuff done than they have time to do it, so that's a place that I'm going to look to expand soon with, you know, relying upon some outside contractors. So think about that mix between the two. The thing I love about the contractors is that it gives you flexibility in your budget, and you can decide, do you want to spend the money on the people, the contractors, or do you want to spend the money on programs? And maintaining that option can be helpful, at least, you know, in an organization, you know, with our scale and size. Once you've sort of brought someone on full time, you need to be very confident that they're going to have, you know, a full slate of work, you know, ahead of them, and you know, you're going to use them all the time because you've made that investment decision. You can't reallocate those dollars very easily.
Again, I think that's all fantastic advice. And one of the things that you said, Chris, is everybody comes into this situation with a different set of skills, and you just have to take the time to assess. But I really like your, what I call, let's come in and address the immediate gaps first, right? It's called the low-hanging fruit. Just what do you need to do to kind of get things going? And then I really liked your thought process for how you move through that. You know, where are we now? What are the gaps? What is the structure of the nurture campaigns? We've got to get the content in there, and then augmenting where and, you know, if you need it with contractors. I think that's all great advice. Well, Chris, we're at the end of the interview, but you have been an amazing guest for us today. Again, it's like a textbook for how to build a revenue marketing team. We appreciate your time so much, and so thanks for being on the show with us.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, Debbie.
Well, thanks, everybody, and stay tuned. We've got a great new episode of Revenue Marketer Radio coming up in December. Everybody have a great day.